David Byrne, Talking Heads, from the album True Stories, Wild, Wild Life. It's Film Week on 89.3 KPCC. I'm Larry Mantle. So glad to be joined by Christy Lemire, film critic for RogerEbert.com and the co-host of Breakfast All Day, the podcast. Also with us, Christian Science Monitor film critic Peter Rayner. And we begin with some David Byrne Talking Head music because our first film to review this week is the Spike Lee-directed musical documentary David Byrne's American Utopia, which follows the 2019 Broadway production of David Byrne's show. Byrne, the writer of it, it's an HBO Max presentation. Peter, what did you think of David Byrne's American Utopia?
It's really terrific. It's one of the best music documentaries ever made, I think, just about out there with The Last Waltz and Stop Making Sense, which, of course, was about the Talking Heads, Jonathan Demme film. It avoids most of the problems that you have when you film a show, and you know, either you just sort of set the camera up in the orchestra and film, or you do too much cutting and too much close-ups, and you don't really get a sense of what the show is in the fullness of its presentation. So Spike Lee does a really good job, I think, of you know, choreographing the camera work in such a way that it's very cinematic. At the same time, you get a real experience of the show. Of course, it's not the same thing as, you know, seeing the show in person or even seeing it in a theater. This is would have been the ideal movie to see, you know, surrounded by an audience in a theater. But you know, that's life. But it's kind of a call for inclusion is sort of what the thesis, if you want to be highfalutin about the show itself. And it really, it's sort of about the necessity for, you know, diversity and inclusiveness, and many of the songs and numbers in the show point that up, some of which are very familiar, you know, Burn Again the House, Road to Nowhere, and so forth, you know, a lot of stuff from the Talking Heads era and lots of newer stuff, too. Byrne is a wonderful camera subject in addition to everything else. He also, by the way, was a one-time terrific director of a movie called True Stories back
in. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, he's an all-purpose talent. You know, he's also a naturalized citizen from Scotland, and one of the themes of the film, too, is you know, that so many of the people on the stage who work with him, the band and the dancers and so forth, are immigrants themselves, and he makes a point of singling them out individually. You know, it's a phenomenal experience.
David Byrne's American Utopia, it's on HBO Max. Christy.
I love this movie so much. This is my favorite movie of the year so far. It is the dose of pure joy that we all need right now. But as Peter mentioned, it's got a lot on its mind. And the way it you know, subtly balances those instincts, you know, the need to entertain and the joy of that and the choreography and the music is fantastic. But, you know, David Byrne has his little monologues in between the songs. And they begin, you know, innocuously enough with gentle, comfortable conversations about the need for human interconnectedness, and they steadily become more pointed. And this is where his ethos and his purpose really lines up beautifully with everything that Spike Lee has done throughout his career, because he's got a lot to say about immigration, about climate change, about the need to vote. And he builds up to that. And it's rousing and thrilling. It makes you miss the communal experience so much, because it would have been so thrilling to be in that room or to be in any room with people watching it. I want to mention that the great Ellen Kouris is a cinematographer on this film. She has shot so many Spike Lee films and also did Jonathan Demme's Neil Young concert film and Dave Chappelle's Block Party. And she really, they put you in the middle of it. There's a sparseness to it and a minimalism, but also an enormity to the emotion and to what they're doing on stage. So get the biggest TV you can find, crank up the volume, get your neighbors angry at you. It's worth it to crank up the music in this film. You've got to see it.
David Burns, American Utopia, directed by Spike Lee. His 2019 Broadway show was documented here, rated TV-14 on HBO Max. The comedy Borat's subsequent movie film stars, of course, Sacha Baron Cohen in his Borat persona. It's rated R. Christy.
Borat is back 14 years later after the original Borat. There is so much to talk about here. We could just do the entire hour of film week on Borat, but I will try to be succinct here. The obvious thing going into this is that we know who Borat is now, right? We know the bit, and Sacha Baron Cohen very cleverly acknowledges that off the top when his character is sent back to America and everyone recognizes him on the streets. Oh, it's Borat, it's Borat. So we get past that, and that gives him an opportunity to put on a ridiculous array of costumes and disguises of really like stereotypical American persona, like cowboys and farmers and just ridiculous sweaters and mustaches and hats. So he has come to America to try to cozy up to Trump. And his teenage daughter, played by Maria Bakalova, who is fantastic, stows away along with him. And it's the same kind of Borat structure where it is totally gonzo guerrilla filmmaking in a lot of ways. They are pulling pranks on people. They sneak into CPAC, the big annual conservative convention that happens, and they ambush Mike Pence on stage. And as we now know, because it's out there, they secured an interview with Rudy Giuliani that became really uncomfortable and really compromising. It is the jaw-dropping moment of the film. In a movie full of like laugh-out-loud, uncomfortable moments, the thing with Rudy is like, it's shocking. It's shocking that he allowed himself to get into that position. But that just shows how good Sacha Baron Cohen is at this kind of filmmaking. It's not as good as the first Borat. Nothing could be. But I laughed a lot. And once again, he's able to get people to acknowledge how racist and misogynist and anti-Semitic they are. So
the film Borat, subsequent movie film starring Sacha Baron Cohen and Maria Bakalova. What did you think, Peter?
It's, you know, intermittently very funny. I mean, the first Borat is for me one of the funniest movies ever made. So, you know, but Maria Bakalova is terrific in it. The difference also, I think, between, you know, the first film and this is that it's like it's hard to do Borat stuff in a world where reality, you know, forgive the expression, trumps, you know, drama. I mean, there's so much now in the news that is, you know, is seems pulled out of the film anyway. All the absurdities and craziness and corruptions. So it's a little bewildering to me, this movie, because there's a lot of, you know, goofy Borat stuff mixed in with, you know, some pretty serious stuff. Maybe the darkest piece of humor I've seen in movies in years comes when, you know, Borat realizes if he goes back to his homeland, he's going to be executed. So he tries to kill himself in America, but he can't afford, you know, to buy any guns or anything. So he figures if he goes to a synagogue, there'll be some, you know, mass shooting and he'll be killed that way. It's a horrifyingly, you know, black comic moment. And it resonates in a way that I think maybe even Cohen did not intend.
Christy, the fact that, you know, he is recognized for the character, how did that play out in the film? That, you know, first time around, people didn't know the character.
Right. And so they acknowledge that by having people stalk him on the sidewalk and, hey, it's Borat. And so he has to change his appearance. He changes his appearance through these ridiculous costumes that he wears and he disguises the whole way
through. But he's the same character, obviously.
He is Borat, right. So he everything's operating on multiple layers here because he's Borat disguising himself to sneak into situations. And then the young woman who is playing his daughter is supposed to be 15, but like has to pretend to be a journalist to get the interview with Rudy Giuliani. So it's all operating on multiple levels here, but the purpose is to expose the racism, the misogyny, the hate that exists in our world. And yeah, I mean, how do you do that when people say this stuff overtly now. And Sacha Baron Cohen himself acknowledged that in a big Sunday New York Times piece about him. But he's still finding a way to get to the core of what makes this country tick.
Borat's subsequent movie film, comedy starring Sacha Baron Cohen and Maria Bakalova. Jason Wolliner is the director. The film is rated R, and you can see it on Amazon Prime Video. Coming up, we'll talk about the comedic drama from writer-director Sofia Coppola, On the Rocks, on Film Week.
Imagine if you could charge your electric vehicle at the places you already love to eat, shop, and play. Whether you're at the movies, on your weekly grocery trip, or running errands at your local mall, Volta EV charging stations are built around your day-to-day and located in your community and nationwide. All you have to do is check in, plug in, and go about your day. It's EV charging made convenient. Download the Volta app to find your new favorite place to charge.
You're listening to Film Week on 89.3 KPCC. A little bit later this hour, we'll hear about the new music documentary, Bruce Springsteen's Letter to You, as we listen, of course, to the hit song Thunder Road by Bruce Springsteen and the E Street Band. Our Film Week critics this week are Peter Rayner and Christy Lemire. Next up is the comedic drama On the Rocks from writer-director Sofia Coppola, perhaps best known for Lost in Translation. This again stars Bill Murray with Rashida Jones and Marlon Wayans. Christy, On the Rocks.
So Rashida Jones is a young wife and mom, and she's married to Marlon Wayans, and they have a seemingly comfortable life in New York and a beautiful loft and, you know, great school for the kid and all that. And her father, played by Bill Murray, is this incredibly charming playboy. And this is like the most charming performance Bill Murray has ever given. Like at age 70, he is having so much fun with like the flirtatious nature of his personality and the swagger and the off-key, dry, deadpan sense of humor. So he's just a total delight in this. But Rashida Jones's character increasingly suspects that her marriage is in trouble and that her husband is not being true to her. He's gone, you know, for work trips a lot. They're start launching a new company, and the woman he's working with is incredibly beautiful and exotic and glamorous. And so she worries that her marriage is in trouble. So Bill Murray kind of like helps her sneak around New York and get to the bottom of this. It is a very old-fashioned New York screwball comedy, but the details of the day in and day out existence of this family are so contemporary and feel so true and rooted in specific details. But there's also a lingering kind of melancholy beneath the playful hijinks. There's a like a simmering layer of sadness going on there. But Bill Murray and Rashida Jones have lovely chemistry with each other. Like the clothes are great and the scenery is great, and you know, it's very, very lush.
On the Rocks, the comedic drama from writer-director Sofia Coppola. Peter.
I liked it. It's I think, relatively minor in the scheme of things. But, you know, Bill Murray, of course, was great in Lost in Translation, you know, an earlier Coppola film and one of her best. And she seems to work particularly well with him and write well for him, too. And he really runs with it. He's such a rogue that you can't really, you know, you're not too upset by all of the things that he does, you know, the way that he puts down women in a sense. But, you know, he just figures that he's a man, and by his nature, he is going to, you know, have a roving eye. And the daughter is constantly rolling her eyes at this when she's with him. But somehow there's a very touching connection between the father and the daughter here. Both Rashida Jones is wonderful also. And it's, I mean, for those of us who know New York a bit, it's also, I have to say, very nostalgic to see a film that takes you around, you know, to Soho Lofts and 21 Club and all of these places. It's like a Cook's tour of New York, you know, pre-pandemic. And I think the nostalgia for what might have been in the father-daughter relationship is also what gives the film a sense of melancholy. You know, it's a movie about how, you know, the way one relates to one's parents as a child, how they connect to you can carry over certainly into adulthood. The Bill Murray character in the film had left, you know, Rashida Jones's mother for another woman, and that colors the relationship quite a bit. It's also sort of interesting, I guess, peripherally that, you know, both Rashida Jones and Sofia Coppola have fathers who, you know, are tremendously successful in their fields, you know, Quincy Jones and Francis Coppola. So maybe that, you know, fed into the conception of the film as well.
Yeah, not a typical childhood, I'm sure. On the Rocks, the comedic drama, rated R, Sofia Coppola, the writer-director, starring Bill Murray, Rashida Jones, and Marlon Wayans, and it's on Apple TV+. Bad Hair is a horror comedy written and directed by Justin Simien. It stars Elle Lorraine, Jay Farrow, and Lena Waithe. Christy.
I love this movie. It's so weird. It is just small and strange and fun. And it's this unabashed B horror movie, but it's got a lot more on its mind than that because it comes from writer-director Justin Simien, who did Dear White People a few years back, which was so sharp and so smart and had so much on its mind in its satire. That is true here as well, but with a different genre. So it takes place in 1989, and they get the hair and the clothes and the music so perfect. Elle Lorraine stars as a young woman who works at kind of a BET style music video channel, and she wants to get on air, and she's sort of languishing to get there. Her boss, played by Vanessa Williams, is incredibly glamorous and urges her to get a makeover. She has natural hair. She goes into the salon where Laverne Cox is this celebrity stylist, and she gets a weave. She spends all this money on a weave, and she feels like that's going to be her entree to a better life. And it is. And that's what is so striking about it, that All she has is change her hair to conform to a societal standard of beauty, and all these doors open for her. But it comes with a cost, because the hair is possessed, kind of like the movie that came out a couple of years back called In Fabric, where the dress is possessed and makes the wearer do horrible things. The hair is possessed. So the beauty and the success and the fame come at a cost. So it's fun and raunchy and depraved in all the best possible ways, but it does have a lot to say about standards of beauty, both for women and within specific cultural standards. But it's also a lot of fun. He had a lot of fun with the music. It all sounds like Belle Biv DeVoe. It's very specific to a certain era of R&B. So I dug it. It is odd. It's not for everybody, but it's a weird, fun little movie.
The possessed object thing is an interesting subgenre. Like, what was the one where the tire was possessed and the tire went?
Yes. Yeah. Oh, I can't remember.
Was that rubber or what?
Yeah. Rubber. Yeah. Yes, very good. Yeah. It rolls along on its own.
Yes. Yeah. So it's a growing subgenre. Bad Hair is unrated, from writer-director Justin Simien, and it's on the Hulu streaming series, service, I should say, a horror comedy. Errol Morris's latest documentary is American Dharma, which features long interviews with former Donald Trump advisor Steve Bannon. Peter.
Well, this is a two-year-old movie, actually. It was shot a number of years ago. There was a controversy when Steve Bannon was going to be interviewed, I believe, by David Remnick of The New Yorker for the annual New Yorker Festival, and there was such an uproar that it was canceled, and the film didn't get a distributor and so forth. So here we are 2 years later with a movie that I can't imagine has less currency to what's going on in the world now than to see a documentary about Steve Bannon. For one thing, it doesn't bring it up to date. You know, he was arrested on corruption charges fairly recently, and, you know, Errol Morris, I think, has made some terrific movies, but he also has a tendency when he does films about, you know, high-profile people to sort of let them go on without challenging them a great deal. I understand the reason for this, and it's better than the opposite approach. But in the case of the Rumsfeld documentary that he did last and this film, there's just not enough poking around in the Bannonverse from Morris. He does make it clear that he thinks that he disagrees vociferously with much of what Bannon stands for, but in the end, Bannon sort of has the microphone. It's sort of interesting in spite of itself because of what he has to say about all the dirty tricks that were pulled and so forth. But he also relates it to a number of films, Bannon does, of films that he particularly admires, not just as good movies, but as sort of, you know, life lessons, specifically Orson Welles' Falstaff, the film 12 O'Clock High with Gregory Peck, and Bridge on the River Kwai. And he sort of draws these, you know, battle lessons from these movies, which is one of the more weird uses of film criticism, I think. He doesn't bring it up, but several of the films that he talks about, specifically Bridge on the River Kwai, were written by blacklisted writers. And it would have been nice if Morris had, you know, queried Bannon about that, dissension. But I think if you're interested in this for historical reasons, it has some value, but there's no particular reason, I think, to see a movie about Steve Bannon now, you know, going on about all the dirty tricks that were pulled and his philosophy and so forth.
All right. American Dharma is the film from documentarian Errol Morris. Steve Bannon at the center of it. It's rated R, available on Amazon Prime Video and the on-demand service Canopy. Bruce Springsteen's Letter to You, a music documentary directed by Tom Zimney. If you can at least get us started on it, Christy, we have 1 minute till break.
Yes, this is an incredibly beautiful documentary that depicts the making of Springsteen's album, Letter to You. He's working with the whole E Street Band for the first time in many years, and it's shot in this gorgeous black and white. It's so intimate, and the snow is falling outside. It's very cozy, and you watch them go through the process of working through these songs, and they've been together for so long, just decades, that the shorthand and the process is fascinating to watch them learn from each other and build with each other. It's very illuminating.
Bruce Springsteen's Letter to You from director Tom Zimney. It's rated PG and it's streaming on Apple TV Plus. Coming up, we'll hear about the documentary The Antidote, and we have many more films to come in our next segment of Film Week here on 89.3 KPCC and the KPCC app.
Support comes from Japan House LA presenting Yes, Kawaii is Art. Express yourself. Kawaii translates to cute or adorable, yet its influence extends beyond aesthetics to encompass fashion, art, technology, and even social behavior. Sebastian Masuda, the king of kawaii, brings together multiple artworks unraveling the kawaii concepts to foster a sense of joy, innocence, and community as a tool for self-expression and representation. Visitors can step into this colorful world to feel the aesthetic for themselves. May 2nd to November 3rd. No admissions fee. More at japanhousela.com.
It's Film Week on 89.3 KPCC. I'm Larry Mantle with film critics Christy Lemire and Peter Rayner. We're talking about the music documentary Bruce Springsteen's Letter to You, directed by Tom Zimney. You know who the star of the doc is, of course, Bruce and the E Street Band. Christy, you know, we had that, was it a Netflix production, the Broadway show that Springsteen did, just himself sitting on stage with his guitar, which I thought was just a great show. This is a chance to see him, though, with the full band.
It's so cool to watch their camaraderie because they've been together for nearly 50 years. And so the way that they make slight tweaks to a song and how they can communicate with one another through a shorthand, and then to watch it all come together and hear the full song recorded, it's fascinating from a process standpoint. And he's got such great friendship with Steven Van Zandt and Max Weinberg. They all know each other so well. So you feel like you're sort of a fly on the wall for these intimate conversations. But he's got a lot to say. He's 70 years old. And there's always so much poetry and so much introspection, but here he's looking back on his life and the friends that he has lost. And he talks a lot about the band that he was in before the E Street Band. And
of course,
so it's
Clarence
just,
Clemens passing too.
Right. But his son is playing saxophone in the E Street Band now. So that's a cool connection. But it's just, if you love Bruce Springsteen, you will love this. I'm not a giant fan, but I really appreciated everything that it encompasses. And he does these fantastic voiceovers. He wrote the script that accompanies a lot of the imagery. And it's just, it's really cool. If you're a fan, you're going to dig it.
Bruce Springsteen's Letter to You, directed by Tom Zimney, rated PG, and it's on Apple TV Plus. And still on Netflix, by the way, is Springsteen on Broadway. So you could even make a night of it and pair those two together. The Antidote, a documentary which is directed by Kahani Cooperman and John Hoffman. Peter?
This is a film with very clear agenda. It's promoted as a film, not about ideas or policies, but about how we treat each other, about who we are and who we can be. And there are about a dozen or so different vignettes that are interspersed within the film of examples of this. It's pretty scattershot, and it could be a lot more rigorous in the filmmaking, and the music score sometimes tells you how to feel. But there are some really remarkable vignettes and human moments in the film. In Boston, there's a nurse who soaks the feet of homeless people as a way to get them into comprehensive health care, and a doctor who's been caring for the homeless in the parks and the streets for 35 years. And in Anchorage, Alaska, there's a recent arrival of Congolese who were in Rwandan refugee camp for 17 years, including a 100-year-old lady, who are helped by the local refugee or resettlement agency. Living together in the community to help. There's my favorite was in Seattle. There's a fourth grade class where they bring a baby in once a month so that the children can relate to the baby and sort of discover their own empathy abilities. There's also the only public school apparently a district in the country in Modesto, which requires a class on world religion to graduate from high school. And there's a Southern Baptist church in Decatur, Georgia, where a Christian ethicist preacher tends to the LGBT community. There's a lot of examples like this of sort of people helping in a community way that I think is a good antidote to a lot of the politicized documentaries that are out now, some of which are quite good, but sometimes you want to, turn that off and get into something a little more positive.
The Antidote is the title of the documentary from directors Kahani Cooperman and John Hoffman. It's unrated and available on the Lemley's World Cinema site, or Virtual Cinema site, excuse me. Nation Time, a documentary that takes us back to 1972, where in Gary, Indiana, the National Black Political Convention, William Graves, the director. Christy?
This is a fascinating piece of history that has been unearthed and restored. It's a documentary about an event that took place in 1972, as you say. About 10,000 Black politicians and activists and artists came together to form their own National Black Political Convention. And it's this amazing array of really significant Black voices at the time, including Jesse Jackson, who gives this huge, rousing speech that comprises a big chunk of the film, Dick Gregory, Bobby Seale, Coretta Scott King, Isaac Hayes performs. And when this first came out, an edited version of it had to be aired because it was deemed too shocking, too radical for broadcast television. And then it was sort of lost to time. But this full cut of it has been unearthed and restored with the help of Jane Fonda and the Hollywood Foreign Press. And as we say about so many films and TV shows that come along now, from The Trial of the Chicago Seven to Mrs. America, like these things all took place decades ago, but they are unfortunately still so relevant. The same causes that they were fighting for, nearly 50 years ago, they are still fighting for. We are all still fighting for. And so it's fascinating and unfortunately still too relevant.
The documentary Nation Time, Peter.
Yeah, it's a fascinating a document. I think the guiding principle behind the convention, which was sort of meant to preempt the upcoming Republican and Democratic conventions in 72, is unity without uniformity. And there was certainly a lot of dissension within the ranks. At one point, a good portion of the Michigan delegation walked out. But you do see a lot of, you know, very stirring speeches. There is sort of dissension that's not brought up in the movie, just peripherally. Sidney Poitier narrates it, and Harry Belafonte speaks the poetry of Langston Hughes and Baraka. But you know, as Christy mentioned, Richard Roundtree and Isaac Hayes are also part of this. They were at the forefront of the black exploitation films, so-called black exploitation film cycle, which Poitier and Belafonte really, you know, decried. So that's sort of an interesting thing. The one character in the movie, there's a woman named Queen Mother Moore, an older lady who lived, you know, well into her 90s after this film, who was big on the whole reparations movement. She's a wonderful folklore character who's a kind of minor legend in black history who really deserves a movie of her own.
Nation Time, the documentary, director William Graves. It's unrated on Lemley's Virtual Cinema. And the documentary American Selfie, One Nation Shoots Itself, from director Alexandra Pelosi. Christy.
If you want to relive this horrific year we're in, here is American Selfie. So Alexandra Pelosi, who is the daughter of Nancy Pelosi, she's a longtime documentarian. She's probably best known for her George W. Bush film, Journeys with George. She set out to document the whole year leading up to the 2020 election. It begins in September of 2019. And she could not possibly have even begun to know what she was going to be documenting. But we know. So as she goes, like month by month, she's going to various Trump rallies and events across the country and documenting the division that inevitably occurs everywhere, no matter what the setting is, between, you know, Republicans and Democrats, and how vocal and how violent it quickly becomes. But she, you know, she ticks it off month by month. And so, like, in February, you're going, oh God, March is coming. The virus is coming. Like, it's like a horror movie almost. It's like, don't go down that hallway. You know what's going to be down that hallway. And then eventually in May, it's like, oh God, George Floyd's about to happen. And all the Black Lives Matter protests are about to happen. And so you're just like, you've got this pit in your stomach, like rewatching it over and over again.
Wow.
Christy,
I'm sorry we've hit the time, but American Selfie, One Nation Shoots Itself, from director Alexandra Pelosi. It's unrated. You can see it on Showtime. Peter Rayner, Christy Lemire, joining us on Film Week on 89.3 KPCC and the KPCC app.